There are a lot of things that matter to me. Family, community, culture, and peace of mind. Hi, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and when balancing life, I have to say nothing brings more comfort than having support. And when it comes to ensuring those things that matter to you the most, State Farm offers the support with an agent available in person or on the phone to discuss your coverage options. Support when you need it, however you choose. That's State Farm's way. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. 19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
My name is Eva Longoria.
And I am Maite Gomez-Rejon.
And welcome to
Hungry for History,
a podcast that explores our past and present through food.
On every episode, we'll talk about the history of some of our favorite dishes, ingredients, and beverages.
So make yourself at home.
Y buen provecho.
We are doing something different this week. We've got a very special guest. Maite and I have always had we've had these conversations a lot, but now we have a professional to guide us through it.
Exactly. We're so excited. So Eve and I were in Spain recently and eating cheese and drinking wine and olive oil and celebrating all of these amazing foods. And the last night that I was there, we were walking to a restaurant and we're like, okay, wait a minute. We're in Spain, the colonizers. And we took a step back and we're like, okay, what is it? There's a larger conversation about decolonizing the diet.
Yeah, and because we were eating so many things that we were like, oh my God, does cochinita pibil come from this? And then we were like, do we celebrate it or are we shameful about it? Like, we were like, oh my gosh, you know, the fact that there's so much pork and vaca, I mean, carne in the Mexican diet. And, you know, Maite and I are proud Mexicans. Like, we are like, woo. But, you know, feeling guilty in the colonizing country and at the same time celebrating the food, right? Like, we were like, this is where this comes from. This is where this comes from. And anyway, we just got into some territory we weren't really comfortable with. Meaning we were like exploring within our own emotional inventory of like, how should we feel about this? And so we have a really, really great guest today. Her name is Claudia Cerrato. She's an indigenous culinary anthropologist. She's a public scholar. She's a doctoral candidate. She's a professor of ethnic and food studies and an indigenous Mesoamerican traditional plant-based chef. This is like, I'm so impressed, Claudia. You were born and raised in East LA, predominantly on a Mesoamerican sazon and diet. And then at an early age, she began to cook alongside her elders and she gained all of this knowledge. And she's centered this knowledge in her academic studies. And you're the one that found her, Maite.
Claudia's amazing. I've known Claudia for a few years now, and I follow Claudia, and we were talking about this decolonization. We're proud Mexicans, South Texans, but also with Spanish backgrounds. When we had this conversation, I was like, Claudia's brilliant. Claudia is the person to talk to.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to Hungry for History.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
how did you even get interested in this subject of like indigenous culinary anthropology? That seems like a hybrid of a career.
You know, it definitely is a hybrid of a career. Kid you not. I mean, and I think it's a testament to my identity, to be quite honest. And, you know, I've always cooked my whole life. I don't know like who I am without food. And, you know, it wasn't until I was in grad school, I was working on my first master's and, you know, I was taking some Chicana feminist courses and I came across Sherry Moraga's work and she talked about it in an article called Queer Aslan, where she stated that Aslan was no longer a mythological homeland, but was indeed flesh, skin and bones that was under patriarchal, imperialist, capitalist United States. And, you know, we needed to liberate. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, my body is colonized. And so what am I going to do to decolonize it? How am I going to liberate myself? How is my body at the last front colonial, you know, frontier? And I thought, oh, through my mouth, through what I'm eating. And immediately it was like day and night. I was like, I need to liberate myself. Like, and it's not just about decolonizing my mind, being open-minded, learning histories that have been erased, but it was like, I need to truly do the work necessary to honor my, you know, my ancestors, to honor my family by remembering what they ate, what my grandparents ate, what my great-grandparents ate. And so that just took me down the trajectory of, you know, really aligning myself to what it means to decolonize, you know, my taste buds, my diet, the way I move in the world. And so with that, being really invested in cultura and ceremony, you know, I was able to merge these worlds and ultimately really emphasize it in my work.
That's amazing. So, Claudia, what does it mean to decolonize your diet?
Yeah. it can mean a lot of things, right? Yeah, it's a huge question. You know, when I was asked this question maybe about 15 years ago, I always centered it from the Mesoamerican experience, Chicana experience. And for me, it was like immediately my first response was always, we need to get away from the colonizer foods. And folks would ask me, well, what does that mean? What do you mean the colonizer foods?
Does that mean McDonald's?
That absolutely means McDonald's. But it also means... But it also means, right, at the time, the way I understood it was getting away from the foods that were introduced. So like chicken, beef, pork, the sugar, the processed food, you know, these particular animals and their byproducts. That was like the way I was preparing food. I was, you know, eliminating these foods. So I was really, you know, looking for what was tangibly accessible that was native. So returning to native food ways, remembering native food ways, particularly Mesoamerican food ways. And so I was like, well, let's start by, you know, understanding what we mean by a standard American diet. Let's understand, you know, how the food palette has changed, how it's become politicized. And so when we're talking about decolonizing the diet, I've learned that it is definitely decentering what we're told we have to eat, but it also means returning to our cultural heritage foods, right? So, and no longer being embarrassed. I know some folks are like, oh, I don't eat beans out unless it's from home, you know, or even then I've had mothers say to me, ay, mis hijos, you know, they don't want to eat their beans. They don't want to eat these foods because they're ashamed, right? So decolonizing the diet also has a lot to do with letting go of that shame and being proud of, you know, our cultural heritage foods.
Yeah, yeah. When I was little, I tested into a different school. So I had to be bused to the white school. And I remember getting on the bus with my bean taco and everybody had a Pop-Tart. And I had never seen a Pop-Tart before. I was like, oh, what's that? And they were like, what is that? And I was like, in my neighborhood, everybody ate a bean taco. And I remember going home and crying, begging my mom to buy Pop-Tarts. And she's like, no, I'm not buying. You know how much Pop-Tarts are? They're like $4 for a box. Like, I'm not, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But I was embarrassed.
Exactly. Yeah. I can relate to that. And, you know, and so now I definitely own it, right? So now I go around saying, yes, I am a frijolera. And not just that, but I'm also a nopalera, right? So I eat cactus. Like, I'm proud of it. I'm not ashamed of it, right? I don't put it to the side and I don't look at it as something inferior because I know it's not. You know, with early colonialism, when the Spanish first arrived, those were the ideas that were instilled onto the indigenous peoples. They were told that their food was inferior food. Therefore, they were inferior people. And so folks didn't want to affiliate with that. They wanted to feel superior. And so they wanted to eat, quote unquote, those superior foods that the Spanish colonizers were eating. And, you know, and that trickles down to today's day and age.
I grew up, you know, in South Texas. My parents were from Mexico. But I, growing up in Laredo, everybody spoke Spanish. So I didn't know what it meant to be a minority until I was in college, because I wasn't. We were not allowed to speak English. We were not allowed to go, you know, to McDonald's, because my mom was always like, that's not food. That's not real. You know, growing up, the border was so fluid. My grandparents, my friends were across, lived across. So it was sort of a very, you know, different experience that I never felt that shame of eating beans, because that's what everybody else was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what's so funny? My dad did not let us eat fast food either. Like, it was my mom on payday, which was once a month, would buy us a Domino's pizza, and we'd have to eat it before my dad came home and hide the pizza box in my neighbor's trash can because my dad was livid. And we're from the ranch. I'm also from South Texas, and we would grow the food. And my dad's like, the earth will give you what you need. And so if it was calabaza season, we had calabaza for months. And I was like, I hate calabaza. And then it would be watermelon season. And it was like, oh my God, I'm so tired of what. But he would grow. You have to grow seasonally. And then we'd have to pick it all the time. And I hated it. I hated it. And now, like, how expensive is it to eat seasonally? You know, like, you're like, wait, this is what I've been doing my whole life. Don't go anywhere. Hungry for History. We'll be right back.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. 19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How do you think that learning about our foods, right, about people, about native foods, help us treat people with more empathy?
I feel like, you know, one, we don't make that correlation, right, between people, food, land. But I feel like if we begin to understand, you know, these cultural experiences, then we understand the politic behind why, you know, there is migration, why folks are seeking asylum. You know, people have been displaced because of capitalist food endeavors that go and take over land. Again, this goes back to those push and pull factors. It's very food centered. And, you know, to understand that folks are just trying to survive here. And, you know, it's not about taking resources. It's about, you know what? We've been displaced and we need to survive. We need to eat. We need to feed our families. And, you know, I feel when we begin to understand, you know, the cultural food politics and issues around diet, then it allows us to be exactly that, to be understanding that this food system, it's so deep and it's so intricate. I mean, that it truly affects people's lives and not just, you know, health, not just through the body, not just through, you know, the spiritual and the mental, but like, we're talking about like, you know, economically, we're talking about, you know, sustainably. Just learning about food really helps us understand people's migration experiences and why it even happens.
Quinoa. Right? Like it became so popular. It's quinoa. And, you know, the fact that it's from Peru and it's a very native ancient grain that they've been using for thousands of years. And that now the value chain or the food chain that's happening is difficult, right? Because it's a native crop. But because now the world wants it, because it's them all that's rising in popularity, it's hard. You know, there's an increased production and now other countries are producing it. And now because other countries are producing it, like China and the UK, the prices in Peru have dropped and now small farmers are suffering. It's like a whole freaking chain of events mm-hmm. that happens behind food.
Exactly. Yeah. And then for some of these communities in Peru, they can't even afford the cost of what quinoa is because of the production and the demand. It really speaks to small farmers being pushed off and having to seek another type of living, because they can no longer farm their lands.
Mm-hmm. Even in Mexico, right, with the corn tortilla, most people have this like crappy corn tortilla that's filled with, it's all fillers and don't even have the real, you know, nixtamal tortilla. I have a question that, and I'm going to sound like an idiot. It's the big question that I have about decolonizing. Well, all three of us live in Southern California, right? And the land is so rich. You know, I have a lemon and an orange tree in my backyard. I love to cook with olive oil. Should I not? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, where is the line?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. At one point, I would have said, yes, we got to get rid of all those foods, right? We need to recenter these, you know, these native foods. And the reason for that is because my elder said to me, Claudia, if we do not eat our cultural heritage foods, they're going to go away. And for me, I was like, oh, this is a call to action. I need to eat these foods because the foods need to know that I want to eat them. The foods need to know that I need them to survive because their survival is my survival. And then working with, you know, chefs from the Native American food sovereignty movement, I've learned that there's a way to indigenize some of these foods, like the limon, right? We give them a new purpose because they have become, you know, part of our cultural sazon. They've become what we've grown up with, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We use a lot of lemon and cilantro and some of these right. foods that are not particularly native. However, right, we gave them a new purpose. And again, what's beautiful about them is that these are not, you know, processed foods. These are not fake foods, right? But I also feel that, you know, part of you know, decolonizing and part of doing this food work responsibly is understanding what I like to call the lesson. So it's an acronym for local, ecological, sustainable, seasonal, organic, and native. When we do our best, right, to, you know, stick with those particular principles, then it allows us to also align ourselves, right, with our natural ecology, align ourselves with what is available, you know, during these particular seasons. Because to be honest with you, certain foods that are seasonal, they prepare us for the season to come. Like my front yard right now, the rains just came down. It's covered with stinging nettle. Stinging nettle is not native. However, I'm going to consume it because it's going to prepare my body for the spring. The flowers, the blossoms, everything's going to be happening. I'm going to build my immunity. It's going to build so that I don't get inflammation. And so, you know, there's really something beautiful about, you know, finding the balance. And that's what I've been told over and over again, you know, because balance equals ecology. And that's what's important here, because ultimately, at the end of the day, the work that we're doing here and the way we eat and how we eat, it's yes, it's about us, but it's also about the generations to come. And that's why I do this work, because I constantly think about that. And I think about, what does this mean for me? You know, what is my responsibility? Because I feel like the food has called me to do this work. It said, okay, girl, you're into it. So you know what? Here you go. Now, you know, turn this into medicina. Turn this into the medicine for the people. Help them remember.
Well, you know, it's funny because that's the conversation Maite and I were having here in Spain. I'm in Spain right now because I'm shooting, but is like, oh, should we not, you know, like, should we not eat the pork chop? Should we not celebrate jamón ibérico? And it's hard, obviously, to eat a decolonized diet entirely, but the knowledge that I like, you can tell some Mexicans today, babe, pork wasn't here before they came. And they'd be like, of course it was. Yeah. And you're like, no, you know, like I said, we have cochinita pibil. We've always had pork. In Monterrey, in the north, you know, all the beef. And it was like, you know, this was a vegetarian country, like the whole country. Like they had maybe some fowl, maybe some, you know, turkeys and some
and quail
and some ducks. Yeah. As a some garnish ducks. Almost. Like it was like, it's a garnish
small serving.
But if you tell somebody from Monterrey, a refugio, there wasn't carne, like guys, carne wasn't always here. They wouldn't believe you. No. They wouldn't believe you because it's carne so ingrained. Carne asada
and even
is
then,
a
that's a Southwest thing. Exactly.
I do think it's just knowing what was that native diet like and the benefits of that diet. Like it was so amazingly healthy to eat that way in indigenous times. And then again, like you said, to celebrate and honor it. So I went to the corn farmers in Oaxaca and these corn farmers have a rainbow of corn at purple and black and blue and green and the mixed and the this. And they said, because the U.S. only wants the white corn, all the other corns are dying out. And I was heartbroken because if you go there and you see it, you're like, I want a purple tortilla. Red tortilla.
Yeah. The flavor is like, so different. Yeah. The nuances, right? The nuances of the colors taste different. And it is, we think that things are going to be around forever, right? We think that the purple corn is going to be around forever. But if you don't continue growing it and honoring it and educating people about it and eating it, things do disappear. Like there is this extinction that can happen if people don't continue to grow and eat and teach about these foods.
Yes. You know, and it goes back to like the GMOs. It's a type of bioengineering that occurs. And, you know, it creates this change, right? When I think about GMOs, I think about it in terms of how it reduces biodiversity. It's a different type of ecological colonialism. And the same thing, right? The original form, the original food way, it changes, it alters. It no longer is what it was. And so when we stop eating these cultural heritage foods because they're purple or red, because they're not quote unquote white, our palates are becoming colonized. You know, what we desire, what we crave, right? Now it's colorized. And so to decolonize, right, it could also mean, you know, how we decolonize our tortilla. It's perhaps no longer eating the yellow and the white, but eating the blue and the red, you know? And so there's just so many intricate aspects to what it means to decolonize.
Well, I love that you talk, because, you know, I do a lot of advocacy for farm workers, and people go, oh, were you a farm worker? And I go, no, I eat. Like, you know what I mean? When people go, why do you care so much? Were you a farm worker? No, I care because I eat. If you eat, you should care about farm workers. And I remember reading an article one time in, I want to say like Bon Appetit or one of the Food and Wine, one of those, you know, fancy food magazines. And they were comparing, should you buy organic or not? And they were doing the cost of organic and the cost of a regular avocado, the cost of organic milk, the cost of, and nobody factored in the human cost of not having pesticides sprayed on a person. But they were like, oh, well, an organic avocado is $3. But really, all that means is like the skin. And nobody talked about the humanity and the people who plant and pick and produce our food. And I find there's a huge miscommunication about that. And I feel like during COVID, you know, farm workers were declared essential workers. And I said, they've always been essential.
Always.
Like we didn't need a pandemic to tell us farm workers are essential.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Because there is this idea of disposable bodies. And, you know, no, I'm sorry, you know, but that work is vital for the survival of the food and for the survival of people.
Don't go anywhere. Hungry for History will be right back.
Tengo diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think we're a lost cause? You know what I mean? When you're like, we're already too far gone. Like eventually we're going to forget the corn tortilla eventually. Or do you find there is a reclaiming?
Yeah. You know, at one point I would have said, man, this whole thing is a lost cause, you know, but nowadays I honestly don't feel that way anymore. I see, you know, folks awakening their taste buds and their palates and their memories, right? There's a desire, there's a need to return to understand. And I see it, you know, even here in LA, you know, folks are like, you know, how do we, you know, decolonize, or how do we, you know, go about in, you know, making our, you know, Mexican traditional foods more plant-based, right? So people are asking, people are curious, and they're understanding the correlation between diet, food, and health. And people don't want to be sick, which is beautiful and wonderful, because that means, you know, folks are actually doing what it takes. And for some people, it does require learning how to plant, how to grow. But for a large majority of people, it's how to cook. Not a lot of folks know mm-hmm. how to cook.
Yeah. Nobody knows how to cook anymore.
Yeah. People don't know how to cook.
Nobody knows how to cook. You know, so I feel, you know, hopefully in my lifetime that there's going to be a shift, because more and more folks' ancestral, you know, memories are going to be activated. So that way they desire more of what their grandparents ate.
I like that you're so hopeful, Claudia, that this is, we're not a lost cause.
No.
It's all about, it's about educating.
Yeah.
Right.
And to that end, like when you teach this course in class and you talk about decolonizing the diet, what's the response?
I am, to be honest with you, I'm really shocked, because at the end of courses that I truly emphasize food, and that's usually what I do, no matter what the topic is, I always find a way to connect it to food. I've had students cry to me. I've had students talk to me how now they're bonding with their parents or their mothers or their grandparents because they're asking them questions about food. I've had friends that have actually started food businesses by, you know, centering their cultural heritage foods and be very successful at it. I've also had students return to ceremony because it was the food that guided them into ceremony spaces and ceremony circles. I've also had students who changed their diets completely. I've had even some that had were diabetic. And they're like, Miss, you're not going to believe this. You know, I'm no longer diabetic. Or you know what? I've lost you know, over 50 pounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, we bump into each other in the community. They're cooking. They're like, look, I'm making, you know, oyster mushroom pozole. You know, thank you.
Oh my God, that sounds delicious.
It's delicious. You know, gosh. And so I've just been like, you know, we need more courses like this, because it's really impacting students. And, you know, to this day, I've never had anyone say, oh, this was a waste of time, or, oh, you know, I'm just going to continue eating my food from the streets, you know, fast foods, right? Because I mean, I totally support, you know, street vendors and so forth, because, you know, that's where the tacos are at. But no, it's been such, you know, received with such great success. And it's been very transformational. Very transformational.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Wow. Like I said, I would love to take this class.
Mm-hmm. Me too. It's amazing. I have a question about the stinging nettles that you collected over the rain and eat and are going to eat. What are they? And what are you making with them?
Yeah.
And so do I have them in my backyard? I don't know what that is.
You most likely you do.
Really?
Most likely you okay. do. Yeah. So stinging nettle, it's, you know, quote unquote, invasive weed. And if you touch it, it'll sting you, right? So it'll kind of give you a little, like a little pica. They're beautiful, bright, vibrant green. They have their leaves almost look like feathers. So I'll make a batch of tea so that way when the spring comes for allergies, and then with my live harvest, what I'll do is I'll blanch them and I make pesto out of them. So I usually make like a stinging nettle pesto, which actually I'll be making in a few weeks at a chef's table. I'll be offering a stinging nettle pesto. And so that's one of my favorite dishes to make. So whatever I can use, I just, you know, throw it in wherever you would use any kind of green, any kind of leafy green. But you do have to blanch it so that way you take the sting out of it.
Okay. Mm. Okay. So it's like a nice bitter green?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to look for them. That
look
sounds so good.
Them.
That sounds amazing.
Oh my God.
They're
that sounds
great.
Amazing.
They're so
yeah.
good. Yeah. I'm just so fascinated by your line of work, and I really applaud you, because it is definitely not easy, but I love that. You know what I always feel like like people are most productive when the agenda is something totally outside of what you think it is, right? So you're like, I've got to save, you know, the indigenous ways and foods. Like you didn't go like, I want to lose weight.
Oh no, you know,
right.
I want to, yeah, I don't want to spend so much on it. Like the motivation is really, you know, about the survival of this indigenous foods and ways. And so I just applaud you for that because it can't be easy, but when you have such a clear vision and intention, I guess, you know, makes it a little easier.
Yeah. And you know, the food itself, right, also is a carrier of this knowledge, right? It's something we call traditional ecological knowledge. These foods, you know, let us know when to harvest, let us know what season it is. It also lets us know, you know, the importance of cosmology. They also, you know, remind us of how to be in relation to one another, how to grow together, how to be a community of plants. And so for me, that's something I also recognize and honor, you know, in the food itself, because I know that I'm going to, you know, consume this food. And I'm going to embody that knowledge. And that's something I truly give thanks for, because for me, you know, food is a carrier of this ancestral traditional knowledge. And it teaches us a lot about, you know, the ecology, ethnobotany. And it also allows us to explore our recipes and create menus. And for me, these menus become, you know, codices in the flesh, right? They become stories of the food. And for me, that's just another element of how to preserve and, you know, to be able to continue to pass down this taste sazon to the generations to come.
Thank you, Claudia. This has been so enlightening. Thank you so much for the work that you do. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us. This has been truly enlightening.
And we are, Claudia, we're going to share everybody your info and your handles with everybody.
Oh, thank
because
you.
If they want to know more about decolonizing the diet, like they
Absolutely.
Really should look you up, look up the work you're doing, and we want to connect those dots for sure.
Gracias. So, I appreciate that.
So great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you,
pleasure.
Claudia.
Gracias.
And thank you all for listening to this very special episode. It wasn't our normal recipe and ingredient show, but wow, was it good. Hungry for History is an Unbelievable Entertainment production in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura podcast network.
For more of your favorite shows, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Diabetes.
Yo, asma.
Estamos en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica.
19 años o más con afecciones crónicas como asma, diabetes, EPOC o enfermedad cardíaca, o tienes 65 años o más, estás en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20, una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Aunque te hayas vacunado previamente con otras vacunas contra la neumonía, Prevnar 20 puede ayudar a proveer protección adicional. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones de 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Los adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. Los efectos secundarios incluyen dolor e hinchazón en el área de la inyección, fatiga, dolor de cabeza, dolor muscular y en las coyunturas. Para obtener la información para la prescripción completa, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.